Hey, Basic Folk Buddies. I want to tell you about a podcast I really love called Broken Record. Each week, hosts Justin Richman and Leah Rose sit down for in-depth conversations with musicians from all kinds of genres and generations. You'll hear artists like Smokey Robinson, Billy Corgan, St. Vincent, Damon Albarn, Daryl Hall, and John Oates, and many more as they open up about their creative lives and the stories behind their most meaningful work. If you're a music fan, I highly recommend checking out Broken Record, where real musicians have real conversations.
Hey folks, it's Ismay. I am coming to you from the road. When this episode comes out, I'll be about to do a screening of Finding Lucinda on the East Coast and the Midwest. I'll be in Boston, New York City, upstate New York, Providence, Rhode Island, and then Chicago, and then I am going home. But don't worry, there should be some more screenings getting announced soon for 2026 for cities I did not make it to on the first round. Today's episode is another behind-the-scenes conversation. This time it is with the director of the documentary film Finding Lucinda. We sat down in a hotel room on the fifth floor in New Orleans, Louisiana, right before the New Orleans Film Festival. We had a lot of interesting ideas that we went over that Joel and I had never spoken about. Ideas like how you develop the language of a film. We talked about how we were really surprised by Lucinda's reaction when we interviewed her. We discussed how we dealt with the surprising reaction and tried to make something positive out of something we didn't expect. We also talked about the artist's experience of not being where you thought you should be by a certain age, not necessarily meeting the goals you envisioned when you set out on your career. We talked about how to move forward productively from that realization and making the most of what you do have. We also talked about the idea of trusting others in collaborations, and we talked about filmmaking concepts like contrasts and clarity. If you haven't tuned in to the previous episodes or watched Finding Lucinda, I don't think everything in this conversation is going to make total sense to you, so I highly recommend you watch the film or listen to the podcast before you listen to this. But regardless, thank you for being here. I think you guys will really enjoy this episode. Joel has a lot of fascinating, important things to say about the process of making Finding Lucinda. So I'm here in New Orleans, Louisiana, at the New Orleans Film Festival / NOLA Music Con, and I'm talking to the director of Finding Lucinda, Joel Fendelman. Tell me about your experience being asked to be part of this documentary film project. Tell me the story of how it all started for you.
This was a long time ago, first of all. This is like 6 years ago, pre-COVID pandemic. And if I remember correctly, you had put out a call to work with collaborate with a filmmaker. And it was on a listserv, I think, that I was a part of, New Day Films. And so I responded to that. I remember we first talked, and it was a much smaller project at that point. It was just wanting to do something around Lucinda, wanting to do something around your cover band of Lucinda songs and some sort of exploration with that, with your dad. And so that's where it started. And I was like, cool. And here's this year. I didn't know who Lucinda was. But I'm a filmmaker. I love to learn about things, and this sounded exciting to me. So I learned quickly who Lucinda was, and through the project fell in love with her and her music. But that's where it started.
And we started out really with conversations on Zoom. What did you learn from that early experience of us going back and forth before we ever picked up a camera?
I learned a lot. I mean, the interesting thing about filmmaking is it's such an opportunity to learn. I mean, just in my own world, the film is just an opportunity. So things that came up for me in learning, learning about Lucinda Williams, of course, but learning about being an artist and the struggle and doubt that comes into that. And these are things that I am now a musician. I am learning. But I wasn't a musician at that point. I'm a learning musician, not a musician yet, but aspiring. But learning about being an artist and wanting to create something, and the doubt and confidence and the hustle and, all right, should I continue on this journey that is really tough sometimes? Like, man, and I get emotionally thinking about, like, man, I've been hustling this for a long time, and it's just give me a break. Like, I just want a break. Give me a break, please. And it happens. It does happen. You know, making this film was a beautiful break for me. It was a beautiful opportunity.
So when you're working on a project at the very beginning, and it's all in the ideas phase, tell me about your experience of that process of, here's this general idea, and how do you focus it into something? Do you start by developing the idea? Do you just start by filming? Like, how does the idea go from the crystal of a little notion into something more tangible?
Yeah, I love doing some initial filming. And I remember when Rose Bush, the cinematographer, came with me on this project, we did a scout. And it was a very collaborative process for me and her. And did some filming with you on the farm. And it was just like with my little camera. I was like something about just like starting to put footage together and feel it out. That's very much the process that works for me, and it starts to feel tangible. So I do that a lot, actually, with making a film. I'll just do a sketch, whether with the person who's in the film or without, and start to just put some music to it and feel what that feels like, and let it develop from there.
You can learn so much more by doing and adjusting than just by planning in art forms. And it sounds to me, in the world of film, that you can kind of get your ideas and your concepts, but you really have to start the recording process to let the story develop into something. What was your experience of watching the story develop from the initial idea?
I loved where the story went, because the initial idea was much more of very much a short film that was just a lighter, like, slice into it. And we ended up then diving deeper into the roots of this artist, Lucinda Williams, and which is really just the question of, like, what makes an amazing songwriter, where does it come from? So what makes an amazing artist, where does it come from? And we can all relate to that. And so that was exciting for me in starting to expand and then also do a level of investigative research in, wait, where was, it was kind of like sad anyway, because we'd go to all the, oh, she played at this venue. Okay, it burned down. Oh, the guy who supported her in her first album, oh, he died 2 years ago. It's like all these like roadblocks that were just like a day late, you know, on it. And, but also then we find someone, and then we find like a John Gramado who played with her on that first album, and get to see really salt of the earth guy who was a part of that experience and that world at that time. And it's just lovely to meet all these people and start to put it together. And of course, the challenging part is more in the filmmaking logistics of it. It's like, all right, we're doing a tour. We want to set all these things up at this time. And then someone gets COVID and we have to cancel it. And at the end of the day, it really all works out the way it's supposed to, and the best way.
So one thing that was really interesting for me to watch happen in the beginning is we probably had a list of 35 people we could interview, all these ideas from Lucinda's life. And then what I kind of allowed to have happen is, obviously there's the restrictions of people who have passed, people who are too busy, people who maybe you do a pre-interview and they're not super engaging or something like that. But I think a big part of the process that was really interesting to me is I kind of put forth these ideas and then I let you choose who you thought would be good to interview. Yeah. What was your thinking about why interviewing one person versus another?
So there's only so many interviews we can put in the film. And it seemed like we wanted to have some level of diversity of capturing what was going on. So like going back to John Grammato, the, representing the choice of someone who chose not to continue on that path of dreams and chose a different path and like flipped a coin and made that choice. And I, you know, I don't know if he regrets that in any way, but we all, I think we all can relate to that of making a certain choice in life. And the question of like, what if I went that other route? Even though probably I'm very happy with the choice I made. So that was important to have that representation. And then Mary Gaucher representing like a slightly younger generation at Lucinda, but still looking up to level of career and generation in that sense. And then, so it's just really capturing people, different places, different parts of Lucinda's career, and could represent parts for, yeah, for you in your journey. And so it's like, it's always a mix of just logistically, like practically, like who's saying yes, when are they saying yes, and then the mixture of creative and just and logistics and seeing where they can meet.
I remember one interesting thing that you did during the filmmaking was, even though I was involved in sort of the maybe the background of it, you still withheld like certain things from me. Yeah. So you could capture it on camera. I do remember the fact that I did not know, I did not meet or talk to John Grammato in advance. That one I didn't know. And then, oh, the biggest piece, though, was the letters from Lucinda's dad and all the stuff in the archives. You didn't let me see that until we were filming.
That's right. And we had that really like youthful, wonderful reaction you had. Like, oh, man, this is... And then I remember there was something on the camera like, no, we captured that, right? Because it was actually the first letter that you read in that. And so the first couple minutes, you're always trying to like, you're always filmically figuring things out. And I was like, oh, why do we put this as the first letter? But anyway, filmmaking is a very unnatural process. And yet we are looking for very authentic moments. That's the core. That's what we're searching for. And everything else is really capturing that moment that then the audience can connect with and have an emotional connection and feel something. And then that circulates back and forth throughout the process of watching the film. And so it's an unnatural process, yet we're looking for something supernatural. So how do we create moments that are authentic moments and aren't pre-planned? Because so much of it is pre-planned, and that's by withholding information that's a surprise. And as subtle or as little as just not reading or not meeting someone first, so that there's, hey, that connection, or wanting to connect and figuring out and whatever happens, like it keeps it fresh.
Another thing that I found really interesting was, so when we made the film, and I went over this in the podcast, but it didn't come up in the film. So basically what happened is we filmed at the farm, and then it was like a year later we did the road trip, and we had to postpone. And then we were going to film Interview Lucinda. Somebody in her band got COVID. We couldn't do the interview. And we said, you know what? The film, like, let's just leave it at that. And then we got the opportunity later to interview her. But one of the things that I was really curious about is, like, there's this whole game of logistics and crazy things that go on behind the scenes when you're making a movie. But you choose to not include that in the film itself. You're like, this isn't really part of the story. What's your thinking about what to include and not include in that respect in terms of like the logistical background of things?
There's so many ways to make a film, and there's so many versions of the film that could be made. And there is a version of this where we pull the curtain back a little bit more and make the whole process and film that. And this, for me, I made a choice that we were going to create a little bit of a world that was really inspired by the world you live in, at least conceptually. I mean, I don't know if any of you know, Avery has a flip phone from like the 1990s, you know, and just the world that you choose to build around you, whether it's an older truck or keeping things very analog, very less digital. And so I thought to create that world, which I also like, and I think the audience resonates too, and just a world that we, it's a little bit like, it is the contemporary world, but it's not. It's a little bit bubble within it. And so that was a choice to just let it be in that world, and also not get caught up in a little bit of that, trying to figure things out, and just like, hey, we're going to just trust that there's stuff happening in the background, and we give hints that you were setting these things up, which you were, but not getting caught up in that being the filmmaking. The filmmaking is more about this journey and this little bit of fantastical journey, what you're learning, and what we as an audience are pulling from it.
When you make a movie, you're trying to create, you're trying to build a world. Yeah. Tell me more about how you learned about that in filmmaking.
I think as soon as the audience starts watching a film, we're looking for the language of the film. And if there isn't a language, it's hard to trust a film because I don't know what language they're speaking. So it could go anywhere. And it's like, wait, what is this? So when I'm making a film, the first thing I do before filming anything, I have to do this, is figure out what is the language of this film. And the language could be set up as, what's the lens that I'm going to use on the, like, there's some like very practical aesthetic techniques, like the camera lens, and a lot of times I'll choose prime lenses that are like, all right, we're using a 35 millimeter, or I'm using a 35 and a 50 millimeter, and that's it. So now there's constraints. And it's like, all right, I'm only doing this. And Rose and I spoke a lot about this. All right, we're going to put everything on steady for the most part, except for these things. We use zoom lenses, but zoom shots, but only in this particular way. And so there's a level of that language, and the end part of language, like, all right, we're going to build this world that's analog, and it's going to be like using this type of colors for this world here. And so it's like a lot of things like that. I think once a film can be anything, and if the audience gets the language from the very beginning, then we'll go along on the ride for it.
You're interested in trying to make sure the audience is immersed in the film. Is that what you're saying?
That they're immersed, but also that they're trusting the language of the film. They're trusting, and we can think about it as a song. A song could be very parallel in the way we talk about this, that there's certain, like genre would be one way of looking at it, but also the style of a film, of a song or a film, we're setting up, right, this is what we're preparing you for. So I understand it's going to be, I mean, like simple things, like the song is not going to be 2 hours long. Like, all right, I can trust this. The film's not going to be, it's going to be a certain length. And we're also going to let you know like what to expect in how we're telling this film or telling this song. And now there is ways to subvert that too, where like Bohemian Rhapsody is such a great example. And I think about that when I'm thinking about films, like we set the audience up for one thing and then we just totally subvert it and go someplace totally different. But it's still within the language of the film, because we're now, that's part of the language, is like we can subvert and come back then to something too. Mm-hmm. So that's in the filmmaking as well, thinking about what's the language. And if I'm choosing to challenge the language I set up, like speaking English and then throwing a couple words of Chinese in there, or Spanish, and then going back to English, it's like, okay, cool. Like keeping it unpredictable is very important as well.
Were there elements of the film where you felt there was a surprise or unpredictability that we brought in that sort of engaged the audience?
Yeah, there's a number of things that, so there was a level of subversion that I was doing towards you, with you, where I would bring in something that you didn't know about to subvert, yeah, the energy and change it up and allow something real and authentic to bubble up that we weren't expecting. And then there was things that we were doing collaboratively to subvert the people you were interviewing. So, for example, interviewing Buddy Miller and bringing in the recording of Lucinda, unexpected, didn't know that was about to happen. You played it. We got this authentic, real, heartfelt reaction from him because of that. which then you're responding to that with your own heartfelt reaction. So it goes back and forth. Or with Lucinda, like we were bringing some tricks to tools or to the up our sleeve up into the interview. You had the letter from her father. She then had this, like, I don't know if she's ever read that or maybe it's been a long time. And, you know, she remembered him. It was just a beautiful moment. Got to play the song, which then led to something like we didn't know how we were going to get to you performing Spin. You're prepared for some things, but then playing the song, she had not the reaction that I was expecting or you were expecting either, which was like, oh, and I felt very uncomfortable about that. I was like, whoa, oh no, is she going to react negatively? Like, but you handled it great. You turned down the volume and then it was a perfect, hey, I could play that song. I'd love to hear you play it. Great. That was so perfect.
That was probably the time where we set something up that things really went in a pretty much as well as they could have gone. So with the interview with Lucinda, we came in with this tape of her original song. We played it for her. She said, that's terrible. I felt, it sounds like you too, felt really uncomfortable. Like, oh, wow, we totally blew this. Like, she's going to be mad. And she wasn't mad, but she was like, that sucks. But we weren't sure how to read her reaction because we didn't know her. But then it was funny that there was this opportunity where she said, you could play it better. And I was like, well, actually, I know I can play. And that was not planned at all. Did you think that would happen?
No, I didn't. I knew that we wanted to have you play a song. And I think we were thinking that song could be good because you brought the 12-string guitar. But I didn't know it was going to happen in that way. So it was so perfect. And you really stepped into the moment of just, you know, the fish was there. You're like, all right, going in. Mm. And it was vulnerable to do that. And that's it was so beautiful. Vulnerability can these moments were not expected is what we're looking for in a film. So it was perfect.
Yeah, I think that vulnerability was a really big part of this film, at least on my part. At the time when we started, I was in this mode of like, okay, Avery, more vulnerability, more honesty, like go all the way and say what you actually think and feel. Don't put up a wall or put up a mask or like joke your way out of this. How did you react to this concept of vulnerability throughout the making of the film?
Yeah, I mean, on one, in trying to create environments where that exists, and with you, and I, in making the film, I could see in the beginning, towards the end, in doing your interviews, how vulnerability was coming more out for you. Like in the beginning, maybe from Charlie all the way to Mary, by Mary, I could see the confidence in your interviewing, which was really beautiful. And I mean, vulnerability as, I mean, just in directing, there's, I mean, anything, but really, I guess from directing in my perspective is showing, making choices. There's a level of vulnerability in whether it's making a strong choice or saying, I don't know, or letting someone else step in. I mean, Rose was very supportive in the filmmaking process for this film and that she, and that was a cinematographer, she really helped bringing other ideas to the table. So there's a level of vulnerability for me and saying, oh yeah, let's try that. Mm-hmm. Let's go with that. Let's bring this into the table. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. As a director, there's probably a certain role you feel like you're supposed to fill. Yeah. And it's vulnerable as you come to every film being willing to try new things and not, you know, I think when we've like, well, I've made, you know, 8 albums, so I know how to make an album. How do you come to a film and make sure you preserve that ability to be experimental and flexible and like take risks?
I find, in going back to the language conversation, if I can create the initial language of the film, then I feel very open. Then I can almost film anything because it's within that language. So that's such an important thing for me in having that language. And then it allows that freedom to just take stronger risks within the purview of the language. That's the boundary. Got to be within the language. But the moments that really stand out for me when I'm on production, filming is there'll be a little voice or a little feeling or a little, like a ping. It's like, ooh, this, we should try this. And sometimes that might be stopping what's going on or taking more time. The more that resource it takes from like changing things up, the more vulnerable it can feel to make a strong choice like that. But so that can be vulnerable feeling, but I think that's the key, to be on the pulse of what is happening versus what I think should be happening. Do you remember in the beginning on the farm, we were filming these shots that were like you talking to camera, presenting, this is the barn, this is the tree, this is the walnut tree. And like we did a few things like this. And I remember maybe after like the third or fourth, it was like the idea I had around it, it just wasn't working the way that I thought it might work. And so we stopped doing it. It's like, and I remember just telling her, I was like, it's not working. We got to just change it up. So we changed it up, did something a little bit different, a little more like less presenting to the camera, a little bit more just following you. And remember, even also in that first time we were doing something more verite, we're like following you around. And it was like within that process, honing down to find what exactly is that language that we'll end up with on this.
That totally relates to my experience of interviewing people for the film, is learning over time how to allow the person to go the direction they want to go and allow the conversation, but also having your, like as an interviewer, as someone guiding the questions, although you as a director were involved too, trying to find a way to know where to push and when not to push and know which directions. And like, for example, I think about when we were interviewing Charlie Sexton, he was the first interview, and we were talking a lot about doubt and vulnerability and do you have doubt? And there was a moment that came where I was kind of trying to push into a direction where he was talking about his own music and he didn't want to go there. And it was a big learning experience for me because it was like, oh, I see. You can push, but you can't always push. And it sounds like when you were directing, you found these moments as well where it's like, I can push this direction, but you have to know when to stop and you have to know when it's not working. Mm-hmm. And that's like the eternal question of creativity, is how much to push and how much to shift direction, I think.
When it's the right direction, quote unquote, it's generally pretty easy. Doesn't mean it's not scary, but it just sort of flows. And I imagine you have this experience when you're interviewing, people just aren't going to talk about what they don't want to talk about. And if I push, like they'll kind of go there and then they won't. And I just feel like it's just not going to happen. So don't even try. And it's just not the direction. People maintain power of like, and that's great, like maintain what they want to do. And it could be in the same way of directing or in like, just things, see where the river is flowing. Here's my motto in life. You're on a river, you can either float down the river or swim upstream. Two choices. Every moment in life is two choices. That's it.
Yeah, I think that applies so much in my life as an artist, is, and it relates to the story, is that you set out when you're trying to make a work of art and have a career, quote unquote, you envision this one way of it going. And then let's say I want to be just like Lucinda Williams, or I want to be just like Harmony Korine or something, some director. And I think we all face that issue of, we see something else we like, we think we see ourselves objectively, but then the world gives us feedback. And that's the place that I'm at right now as an artist, is I think I was trying to be something I couldn't be. And the cool thing about this film, let me back up. I was trying to be something I couldn't be in the way of not changing my art, but expecting my art to fit in a certain venue, in a certain tours, in certain festivals. And I think, interestingly enough, making this documentary and the podcast has allowed me to understand that, yes, I was never really going to compromise my art, but I always had a lot of self-consciousness about the reception and who cared about it and if I was proving myself worthy. And I think making this documentary and putting it out has made me understand that they, I have a certain essence as a person, as an artist, that I can't really change. And like you're saying, like, I can flow up, I can swim upriver and try to make people maybe who want more upbeat music listen, but then it's not going to work. I just relate a lot to exactly what you're talking about, which is, how do you find where the river flows, and how do you know that you can't beat yourself into submission of being something you're not, and you can't continuously expect yourself to fit in places that you don't fit. And whether or not that means you have a large audience or a small audience for your work, you have to find a way to accept that. Mm-hmm. What's your experience of that?
Surrender comes into it. There's definitely ideas and feelings of, all right, I am 44 years old, and I can imagine, probably know this, that maybe 10, 15 years ago, I would have had a vision of, oh, when I'm 44, I'm going to be in this place in my career. And 15 years ago, it's so far away. I'm still in my 20s at that point. And I'm thinking, it's like, yeah, that's so possible. And like, great. And then at some point in life, I'm 44. And I'm not in the place that I was imagining. So there's an incongruence between my dream and the reality of this moment that I am forced to come to terms with, because it is here. Mm-hmm. And so there's a surrender to, okay, this is where I'm at. And there's an acceptance of that that I think allows me to be who I am and what I am to offer to the world. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the fantasy, and maybe it's like a fame thing or like success or society, I don't know what it is, that we just have to let go of, because maybe that's my journey, maybe it's not my journey, but I have a journey, and this is what I'm on, and that'll be what it'll be. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to live that fully.
I think that we can confront the reality as it is and where we fit in, and then learn to value that, because it is really valuable. Or we can just sort of numb that feeling and avoid it and pretend like something is not how it is. And I think it's a really important challenge to realize that our expectations of where we thought we had to be to have the dignity we imagined we needed to have, you know, just accepting where it is and realizing our value as people. I mean, for example, like, because of who you are and the choices you've made and your creative vision, you've been part of this project. And if you had gone a different direction, whether your innate personality elements or other paths in life, this would never have happened. And I think I've been on my own path to accept it, and then to accept my place as a musician and where I fit in, that it may not match with my expectations. But I think what I would hope would happen for people is, when they do see that, whether it's a disappointment or not, you know, kind of depends on the person. And no matter how famous you are, you can still be disappointed with yourself. So that's not a fail-safe by any means. Achieving some kind of grandiose goal of acceptance in the culture isn't a guarantee against that feeling. But I think you start to realize how valuable you actually are in the world if you can confront the truth of where you fit in and how it may differ from the expectations. When you are able to actually accept and sit with the vulnerability of you maybe not meeting your external expectations, you can actually find your real value and sit with the fact that there might be, you know, 10 people in the movie theater and one person it really affects. And in a way, if you're always thinking in this grandiose terms, you're actually not able to be in touch with the real tangible, even material connection that you're making with people. And like, for me, I think in the last couple months, I've really come to accept my value as just a regular person. Like, I think I feel While it's important to me to be creative and try to do the best I can at that, I've realized I have so many people that value me as a friend. When I'm talking to people, how many people there are around me that I forget about that support me. And that is something tremendously valuable. I think when we're always reaching for something bigger, we literally erase in our brains the hundreds of people, teachers, friends, community members, or even people who are fans from afar, like, value what we do. And so that's like the beauty to me in accepting our place is, I think, you know, you can remember your value as a person on a deeper level.
Yeah, but it's about being in the moment. And the moment is what is happening. And anything else is pulling us away. The idea of where we should be or what we should be doing, whether it's in life, career, or in the filming of this scene or interviewing this person, this is what's happening. And making choices based on this is what's happening. It's not what I think should be happening, what I want to be happening. And once we go there, then it allows for magic to happen because we're coming from a place of this is what's happening. Like, and it's a metaphor for so many things because I see it in my love relationship with my partner Lumen. It's just the same thing. We can pretend. I could be feeling something, and I could be pretending this shouldn't be happening. I want this to be happening. And it's going to be a level of fake of inauthenticity happening in the moment throughout that whole dinner or conversation because I'm not really tapping into what exactly is fully happening. And I know when it's happening, like, do I really got to say this? I shouldn't be feeling this. I really got to go there. And then we do go there. I do go there, mostly, not always. And then we sink into that spot. And that's the same with creating art. Once we go there, it opens up the lock for magic of universal connection.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is really true about art. It's something Mary said in her interview that comes up almost every episode is this next level idea. And I think
there are no levels. It's only the blank page.
Well, that was so interesting that I think you brought forth as a director the fact that the movie was starting out as being sort of Lucinda Williams was sort of like the almost like the palette. And then the question was, do I have enough to make it worthwhile to do this? But then you brought it, I think, ultimately into a direction where the film was about, well, all you can really do is grow as a writer. That's what Lucinda said in the end.
Yeah, there's a level of, that's what I appreciate about Lucinda, especially in that line, is that, and even in meeting her, this foreverence of just learning and becoming a better songwriter, a better, it could be anything, a better filmmaker, a better chef, a better writer. And there's something beautiful about that. There is no destination. There's only the cliche of it's only the journey, and it's true. And even from someone that we look up to who feels like they've surpassed any, like they've done it, right? Many times over with almost every single song they've ever written, like Lucinda Williams has. And yet there is a consistent or a constant yearning to continue on and break new ceilings and new rounds. And that's really inspiring. So I can absolutely resonate with that in carrying that on in all that we do.
I think something that's really interesting to me is that just like what you're talking about with the journey and the destination, when you're making a film, you kind of think like, oh, we'll make the film, we'll finish it, and then it'll feel a certain way. And what I've found with this journey is it's been so ongoing, including sharing the film with people. Mm-hmm. What's your been experience of sharing this film that you directed with people, and have you been surprised by how they've reacted?
Yeah, I love in showing this film how people can connect to it who aren't musicians, because I wasn't a musician in making this film. And that is quite beautiful to see that. And that's the goal, that people can resonate and may not know who Lucinda Williams is, may not be a musician, but can resonate with the struggle, really, the struggle of being an artist and putting oneself out there without a guarantee that there's really going to be any substantial return.
Another big element that you brought into your filmmaking was this integration of the natural world. An image that a lot of people react to when they see the film is that tree in the wind as kind of moving. And it's so fascinating because I had never noticed that. And I lived on the ranch for 10 years and I never noticed that happening. What were your thoughts in bringing the natural world into this film?
That's where it all comes from, creativity. We are nature, and that tree is creativity at its most pure state. Yeah, and it just exists everywhere. And that's where inspiration, I mean, where does inspiration come from? We're sitting there, quieting our mind, quieting our soul, talking to our spirits unconsciously sometimes, and then just it happens. Just like that tree, like, well, I have an idea. Do I have the idea? This idea just has funneled through to me, and I am the representation of interpreting that idea. And so it's very mystical. It's very intangible. And just like that tree is waving powerfully in the wind, and there's just an aliveness in it that is intangible, that it's way beyond just the physicality of that tree in the wind. And so I, in the film, wanted to put that because it represents, I guess, creativity and inspiration, just something magical happening there. I can't put anything, our words aren't able to capture anything beyond that, but just to show this image and the feeling and the metaphor of that is the tree is within us shaking and there's something happening and then it's expressing. And so nature, I do find, I embrace that a lot in a number of my films. Also in talking about the nature, that's a big part of you too. So it wasn't like, let me just taking something that's just me and like inserting it. That tree's on your farmland. And so it felt important in your process or in the process that I was observing to capture was to bring in, especially on the farm, nature, because that was such a part of, I mean, your music writing, especially your first or earlier albums was just like nature and like the farm animals and everything, Golden Palomino. So that also is very much letting art inspire the art and bring that in.
Are there any other sort of core themes or ideas that you feel like you bring into all of your films?
Yeah, I have a number of, I'm always exploring concepts. And I'm, so there's the three C's, and I think there's actually five, but I can think of three right now. One is a contrast. How can we bring in contrast in whatever we're doing? And whether that's the example, like we said earlier, of Bohemian Rhapsody, where it's one world of music and then just throwing something totally different in there. And in Finding Lucinda, it could be we're on the farm, there's just a level of tranquility, and now we're in Austin, Texas, and there's a bus coming by, and we're just contrasting. So contrast is always something to think about as I'm thinking about in filmmaking and creating art. Context is really important. Bringing, how am I contextualizing any moment, whether it's something micro or something macro? And clarity is another one. Clarity has been the most mature one that I've come to bring into filmmaking. And I say this because in earlier films, I have had some idea of lack of clarity is cool. Like, oh, you ever go over like a film and then it doesn't really show you much and then it ends and then you're like, well, I didn't really get it, but everyone else liked it. It got a lot of critical, like, all right, that was cool, right? I'm just, and not saying that can work, absolutely. But I found that I would play into thinking that maybe going in that direction where it was actually not helpful. People don't get something I want people to get things. I want there to be clarity. So clarity is really important, because if people don't get it, then what's the point? Then they're not getting it. So why even have that subtlety there? It's not landing. Mm. Need clarity. Oh, I remember my 4C. Consistency. Consistency of language, of how I am telling a film. And that is really important.
I never went to film school. You went to film school. This idea that you brought up of contrasts was something I never thought about in music. Then I was starting to see it everywhere. So if you're thinking about contrast, two things that are kind of put next to each other that are super different, I was thinking about Nirvana, the band, and how they would have, you know, these really soft portions and then these really loud portions. Or a song, the song is by this band, Granddaddy. The song's called AM180. You should look it up. It's a great song. But the interesting thing is there's this really kind of rough sounding guitar that's doubled with a keyboard, and then there's this soft voice, and then it kind of comes up again. So there was just really interesting to me to hear a filmmaker talk about the concepts that you learn about in your training and in your experience and then apply them to music. That's why it's really fun talking to you, because I think like different art forms, you can learn so much. What have you learned from starting to become a musician, learning about Lucinda Williams, that you can apply in your filmmaking?
Mm. I mean, writing a song or a song is just like a film, in that we're introducing, we're bringing people on a journey, and then we're concluding or not concluding, however we want to end the song or end the film. So I think about that in that, what do I like about this? Like, what songs turn me on or excite me, or especially Lucinda Williams songs, why are they exciting to me, and which are the ones that are the strongest to me, and then how is that a microcosm of a 90-minute film or a 3-minute song, but it's still the same waveform trajectory. So I've learned just watching, I don't know, there's like maybe an authenticity, I'm not sure, but I've also just in the whole journey of making this film and watching you and the people that you interviewed, I'd not played music really at all, like a little bit of piano, and I've picked up a guitar, was it a year ago? And a year and a half ago, and just started writing songs, and just that vulnerability of stepping into it. I think everyone on the crew got something, whether they were learning to play, like started to pick up a literal instrument, or expressing some level of boldness in their life. I know we all walked away from the experience changed because of this journey that you were on. And I think we're all kind of like by de facto on it, not in front of the spotlight, but all going through our own stepping into making strong choices. I mean, I changed my whole, like, I divorced, fell in love with the love of my life, and like in a different, that took all courage of putting myself out there and making strong choices, mm-hmm. writing a song, playing in front of other people, like, whoa, you know.
So we've been on this very long, unexpected, multi-layer journey together for 6 or 7 years now. It's been really fascinating for me, and unexpected, and much deeper and more multifaceted than I thought it was going to be, that's for sure. And I think I have a hope that I've allowed it to just grow organically over the years.
Well, one thing you just said in saying that you hoped that you allowed for the creativity to flourish, and that's something that I'm really appreciative in this film and collaborating, is that, yeah, you trusted, it felt very trusted in this process. Mm. And I know, I imagine we all can relate to the feeling of feeling trusted by a collaborator in making art, and how it allows for deeper connection to the material, courage, and I guess commitment. It's like, well, almost like I'm buying in even more because I'm trusted. I want to have, and I have integrity. So in that sense, those two, being trusted, having integrity, I'm gonna give it everything I got. Mm. Because the person's trusting me. So I felt that, and it's a reminder of trusting others for myself. And like, okay, like trust someone.
When I'm creative, I try to really try to make other people feel safe. And I guess I've never put the word trust to it, but I appreciate hearing that because that is what I hope, is that people feel they're open to bring their full self to something and they're not going to be judged. And they're going to allow their light to shine. That's what I hope with collaboration and creativity, that to never be afraid of allowing everybody's light to shine the brightest it can.
Like as a director or as, I guess, like the lead in a band or songwriting, and as working with, being a person of leadership role and working with other creatives, the ultimate goal I find is to create an environment that allows everyone to shine at their fullest. And in some ways, I am really managing that, creating that ultimately, because that five lights shining at their fullest is going to be much brighter than me at my fullest. And that's the ultimate thing in collaboration, to create something that is greater than the individual.
And I think the challenge that I've faced in this journey and everybody faces is, how do you build that with yourself too? How do you trust yourself and accept yourself with the same generosity that you will give for others?
Absolutely. Because there's a version of dimming my light or letting everyone else's light shine fullest, but also not doing that for myself. And that's also, yeah, limits the potential of the art when I also need to be shining fullest. Mm. Exactly. Yeah, it's not sacrifice. It's shine with. Maybe even like even slightly like slightly different color, so it's like leading the way, but not necessarily brighter. But yeah, that's the challenge.
Well, I'm just going to do about... Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Finding Lucinda, my interview with the director, Joel Fendelman. One last thing before you go for today. I wanted to tell you that we just put out the soundtrack to the documentary. There's a lot of cool music on there from the podcast and from the filming. It includes collaborations with Charlie Sexton, Buddy Miller, Los Tex Maniacs, and Mary Gaucher. There's even some poetry read by Lucinda's father, Miller. If you want to get your physical copy on vinyl or CD, just go to ismay.bandcamp.com. If you want to stream it, just look up Ismay and Finding Lucinda. I'll finish out with one song from the soundtrack. This is Abandoned. See you next time.
Taken for granted, I've been fair, but you've been underhanded. I've been disgraced, but I can't bear to face it, 'cause the truth is my heart has been abandoned. I was hoping for heaven, but baby, I ain't blind.